I was enjoying contemplating how this gentleman breaking up the ice. He's such a good worker, I thought. He just was at it all day. Can you think of anything more boring? This. That's what we're doing, breaking up the ice. And that was a really good, the way you have to meditate. It's like you just have to be, just chip away, take a rest, look at the river. And you kept at it all day. He's not a youngster either. Really, I found him quite inspiring, actually. It's a metaphor for, like, you could see maybe some young chap coming in, I'll help you, Grandpa, you know, you're whacking away crazy for half an hour and then going off in a snowmobile. It's too boring. And the old guy just... So, we're over halfway through the retreat. And you might contemplate, why did you come? Now, if you had expectations of a certain kind of experience, I think most people are shattered by now. At least a lot of the people I've spoken to. But each retreat is different each time for each person, but does the work you're doing here, does it address your spiritual aspiration? That's different. One spiritual aspiration is different than a particular experience, isn't it? So is it in line with why you came? Does it fit your certainly doesn't, very rarely does it fit your expectations, because that's the nature of expectations. But what is your aspiration? Why did you decide to book this retreat and all the effort that you made to come here? And is it in line with that? That would be an important question, because a retreat really is an opportunity, isn't it? It's a kind of space we create with some instruction, but with each of us has our own programs and challenges that we're meeting. So how useful is this opportunity? And now we have a few days left. How can I use this, continue to use this opportunity skillfully? Yeah. What is valuable about this, and how can I redetermine? Rather, like we as monks come together every fortnight, we redetermine our aspiration, we redetermine our commitment, we redetermine our sense of brotherhood and so on. And that's very helpful. So throughout one's spiritual life, whether a 10-day retreat or whatever, to keep making some resolve, why am I doing this? And what is this opportunity I have now, and how can I use it skillfully? That's different than say, gosh, I've only got 4 days left and I'm not getting it. That's kind of the greed mind. But the guy chipping away at the ice, if he's greedy about getting the ice done, he'll get really ticked off, because it'll all melt and freeze again. So you can't, that is a very frustrating attitude, but also a very defeating attitude, that this attempt to always get some kind of experience. But what has come out in the interviews is the common experience of difficulty in a myriad ways. that the mind throws up, all kinds of bodily pains and heartfelt sorrows and negative emotions becoming conscious. So that's what this space often does. It allows things to become conscious which didn't have a chance or were distracted because of various commitments and busyness and all of that. So things become float up into consciousness because we're practicing renunciation. Right? We're not distracting. And we're taking on a discipline of staying in one posture for an hour and then changing the posture. And then we're taking the challenge, okay, can I be peaceful with this now? And that's a very revealing exercise, isn't it? It really reveals what our stream of consciousness is like when it's not busy, when it's not distracted, when it doesn't have the things that it's used to. And it's very, very revealing in that way. And that revelation can be frustrating, embarrassing, but that's where truth lies, doesn't it? Truth lies in really understanding the way things are. One good thing to kind of keep in mind is that the quality of the experience is as it is, and that's not so important as what we're able to cultivate within the experiences we have. And what we're able to cultivate is something that begins to create a foundation for enlightenment, a foundation for peace, a foundation for spiritual upliftment and so on. So just the fact that we are spending day in, day out with this guy reminding you, wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up, we're waking up, right? And we're developing a strength in the mind which more and more knows the way things are. We're being more mindful. Right? Not as control. If I think that mindfulness is control, then I'm always looking for a quality of experience and then frustrated with the qualities that aren't that. So that's desire control. But we're not, you know, that's sort of one of the things I've been trying to emphasize is awakening and then staying present without the sense of becoming. So I've kind of tried to hammer home that theme again and again. And even though the quality of your experience might not be so beautiful, have faith that is a very, you know, your ability to stay with negative things, to bear witness to them, is a very, very important thing for the mind, for the spiritual life. It's a power. It's a power of awareness, a power of presence. So try to encourage yourself in the difficulties of the practice to see, well, at least I can just practice just being with this. That's wholesome. That's good. Rather than just try to get rid of an experience or hope you have some other experience or be self-judgmental and so on. Okay, I'll just try to be mindful with this pain, this discomfort, this emotional whatever. And that kind of encouragement is kind of like the guy chipping away at the ice. You know, if he's just looking at, oh, I've got all this to do, he's going to get really frustrated. But he says, no, I'll just take this piece now, and I'll take this piece, and I'll take this piece, and this piece, and this piece, that. And that's what we're doing with mindfulness. I'll just take this piece of life right now, and I'll try to be mindful of that. And this one, and this one, and this one. We're developing things like determination. Just the determination to stay here in this room when all hell is breaking loose. When emotions which are quite disturbing or difficult, when one's willing, okay, I'll just forbear. I'll just develop determination just to stay with this now. That's a huge power in the mind, because there's going to be much of life where we're going to have to use that. All, you know, we need determination to stay with difficult things. And with determination also patience, patient endurance to forbear with things which seem which if we had maybe the opportunity to distract or run away from, now we're kind of allowing them to become conscious. So forbearance is a much of Ajahn Chah's teaching to me was forbearance. In Thai they say otton. And I kind of tell him my sad tale of my mind. And he'd just say, yeah, otton, endure. What could he say? He wasn't sentimental. But he was sober. He says, yeah, grow up. This is if you want to train your mind, you're going to have to bear with this restlessness. This is bear witness to it. And of course, when you're in that, it can sound dismissive or, okay, you know, thanks a lot. It's all right for you. But if one can bring forth that kind of suggestion around difficulties, okay, I'm going to use this to see, can I bear witness to this and be patient with it for whatever a length of time I'm here, for the hour, whatever. That's a very mature kind of practice. And it builds a foundation. It keeps building a foundation of stability, of presence, of tending towards peace, tending towards not running away. Just like being just very honest. It takes a lot of honesty to do a retreat, doesn't it? You can't run away. Oh, you can't. Although we do lock the doors at night. It's a very useful aspect. But just the kind of, how many people are dishonest to just sit with their minds and not blame anyone? Oh, blaming comes up, right? But deeper than that, well, I'm just going to take what comes. A lot of people, if they feel angry, they just dump it on someone else. If they do feel depressed, they get a glass of whiskey or they watch telly, whatever they do. And so this kind of truthfulness that we are developing, the truthfulness of, yeah, this is the way it is now, and I must learn about this. There's something I have to learn about here, about my mind. Not blaming myself, not blaming others, just taking the hit, as it were, and then saying, yeah, and that's a great power. That's a kind of, and it's very humbling, isn't it? Like I was saying to one of the meditators, that there's enlightenment is a series of embarrassments, or it's the death of a thousand stabs. It's kind of different than you thought. Because there is a kind of dying to this, the dying to desire, isn't it? I have to kind of give something up. I have to practice renunciation. Whereas the mind, which is kind of maybe not so mature in spiritual practice, just wants to be happy all the time, do happy things, which is fine. It's fine, but the kind of mature ability to be just the way it is now, just that. There's sometimes a kind of, the letting go is quite profound and quite difficult. And so several people have had experiences of restlessness or disturbances and tiredness, and they've just stayed with it. And because they stayed with it, things are sort of purified through the heart, and they find the mind is very peaceful. And that's different than just kind of zapping up the mind with inspiration. Inspiration is inspiration, but it's very shallow. You can kind of get juiced up on inspiration, but then what's more difficult is expiration. You know, when the practice is like just this chopping of ice. And it's like, if the road is like 100 miles long, And it seemed like it was kind of, it's seeming, oh, I'm not getting anywhere. And it's just like, oh, it's just like, the mind is like treacle, right? And just to say, and that's okay too. And that's all right too. And that's all right too. Because that's really challenging that whole mind, which doesn't want to be here now, doesn't want to be with this right now. And oftentimes, the peace of the mind comes from being willing to go through those valleys, the valley of what the Christians call it, the dark night of the soul, isn't it? That sounds very dramatic, but it can be the dark night of boredom. And it, you know, if you look at what if you keep thinking what I'm just emphasizing, really one thing is try to be present without trying to get rid of or become. Try to do that. And those areas where it's difficult, of course, is where you build the strength. Those areas where I usually get overwhelmed and go into just criticizing or doubting or whatever, and oh, that's just doubt. Or that's just the critical mind, or that's the complaining mind, and just back, chipping away at the ice, builds a foundation where the mind less and less, it just doesn't get moved. The conditions want to move. And then we call that the unshakable deliverance of the heart. Where the heart, you know, the tendencies want to tremble the heart, and the heart just stays with it. That's kind of mature practice, isn't it? It's something that has to be done from one's own insights, from one's own wisdom. And it has to be done in a compassionate way. It has to be done from wisdom and compassion. It can't just be done from forcing yourself to stay in a position and not move. That kind of tyranny doesn't work. So if you reflect on those chants we did and we do after the morning before breakfast, I will abide pervading one quarter with a heart imbued with kindness, compassion, gladness, and equanimity. Those are for me, they are the teachings around the balanced heart, around the what enlightened immersion is, or what does that Goleman call it? Emotional intelligence. When the heart is functioning in an open way, I think, in a non-contracted way, in a non-egotistical way, in an empathetic way, then its response is, according to different situations, generally it's amity. Generally, it's like, even if I don't like you, I certainly don't wish you any ill. Even if I don't like this person, whatever it is, I certainly don't wish them ill. Even politicians, even George Bush, I don't wish him ill. That's not saying that you like someone. It's just saying that when the heart's open, it doesn't go to hatred. It doesn't go to wishing someone ill. And if you're practicing with the heart, you'll see that when you wish someone ill, if I wish someone ill, that's a serious undertaking in consciousness, because it's creating a strong sense of me and other, and contracting the heart, which is going to be a lot of work later down the road. To dislike someone, that's just something that comes and goes. So if I'm open to the feeling of dislike in the heart, and I have a feeling of amity to the very feeling of dislike, then the heart stays open. If I dislike myself for disliking, I contract the heart and I dislike even more. So coming to a sense of like friendliness, friendly awareness, or it can sound kind of smarmy and sentimental, but truly we are heart beings. We're not just brains. You know, our awareness can function from here. So when there is empathy, when there's openness, then there's also appreciation. And that's what that gladness part is. So I'm going to be going back with Arsena to Ottawa tomorrow afternoon, and we're going to get Mum some flowers, and I'm going to give them to Mum, and I do this a lot, and I'm going to really look at her face when she sees the flowers, and she's going to be really happy, 95% sure. you always get a Buddhism is impermanent, so you got to be careful. But you don't want to set yourself up too much. But anyway, I look at her face, and I appreciate her gladness, and that's what mudita is. That's that third one. Mudita is the appreciation of the joy of others, and that's a powerful empathetic feeling. And then I'll sit with that. I'll enjoy it. Why not? You've got a bit of gladness, you might as well go for it. Cash in. and so the more the heart does that in compassion, in gladness, in amity, the heart begins to be a part of our awareness practice. And that's something that we're trying to develop as a foundation for enlightenment. The open-hearted attitude to life. I suggested physically getting in touch with that, whatever way you can. And I think awareness has a heart component to it, because our consciousness has a heart component to it. So it's not just a kind of me observing every little detail, naming it, labeling it, controlling it. I don't know, I tried that myself. I just got all kind of sour. So to be able to recognize things is good, but I think that receptive attitude is very much based upon the heart, about empathy. So that's one thing we can train in, especially around those difficult parts of our own consciousness, to have empathy for your own suffering, to allow the difficulties of your mind. I give you permission to feel whatever you feel is a truly compassionate mind state. And then that compassionate mind state informs our consciousness more and more and more and more. Now the fourth of those, equanimity, is like for me, when I went to Thailand, I found some very equanimous accomplished monks. And so I thought I just had to be cool. Right? So some of these monks, they could just sit like the Rock of Gibraltar for hours with mosquitoes all over them, and they were just really, really calm, very equanimous, accomplished spiritual practitioners. So I thought, well, equanimity means you don't react. But I was reacting all the time. So I felt really kind of pathetic and self-critical, blah blah blah. But it's a bit of wisdom began to dawn. The challenge was again that this is a reflective teaching, not a teaching about taking positions. Okay, coming back to that, it's a reflection. So equanimity is a possibility. I haven't got it yet, but how do I make the transformation? So that when the mind wasn't equanimous and the teachings came up about equanimity, how do you do it? How do you get from the frazzled mind, the excited mind, like, say, the first, when I was a novice at Ajahn Chah, I'd just been there a few months, and I was craving food, something awful. Because the food is very simple and coarse, and what happened at Wat Pa Phong, where there were about 50 monks there, and Ajahn Chah would get invited into town to maybe a blessing of some sort, and some family would invite 7 monks to come for a meal, and the meal was fabulous, guaranteed. So. And I was just a junior novice, so I thought, I probably won't score there. But lo and behold, one day on the chalkboard, there was Viradhamma. So I was going the next day, and my mind went bananas. It was just berserk. I just could not control it. That was like the Labrador, you know. No equanimity at all. So I we go to the meal, and I just got crammed the food into my bowl. I couldn't control myself. It was like, just embarrassing. I finally dig into the food. I did enjoy it. My mind was so excited. And then I felt guilty. So, sitting in the car and feeling depressed. Rajan Shah looks at me and says, "How are you doing?" And I look at him and say, "I still really love food." And he said, he's very compassionate. He said, "Yeah, so do I." I said, "Oh, thank you." So there was absolutely no equanimity, right? Then I go to one of these meals and just be really controlled, look better, and get so embarrassed. And then just trying to control greed, right? Just take half a banana, don't take a whole banana. That didn't work. And then I began to see, how could I develop equanimity? I could begin to accept the feeling of greed. That's the first step, acceptance, isn't it? Greed feels this way. So, if you look at stream of consciousness, you got what you got, right? If I've got greed, I've got greed. And no amount of me denying is going to help. So, what would be the transformation? It would be, first of all, to practice acceptance with the way things are. Come back to the same thing. And then if I accept this is greed and stay within the boundaries of my discipline and watch and acceptance, then what am I doing? In stream of consciousness, I'm putting the factors in of equanimity. And there's still the greed there, but I'm seeing it as an object now. I'm not just being greedy, I'm knowing greed. So each moment of acceptance of greed and staying within the discipline that I live by means that greed, the power of greed, is beginning to be dismantled. Right? If I reject the greed or I suppress the greed, it's being made real, made more powerful, actually, because that's what repression or suppression does. If I hate myself, that doesn't work. If I just follow, that's it. I tried that for a few years. That doesn't work. The middle way is acceptance of the way things are, but knowing it objectively. And so then I say, oh yeah, that's how I have to do that. So then the greed would come up, or a loss would come up, or whatever. Okay, that's what it feels like. And that's the Iceman again. Chipping away, right? The greed seems huge, the loss seems huge. Be patient. Very unexciting. Very just one sliver of ice at a time. But you see, if you're looking at stream of consciousness, you see the logic of it. It's got to work. Because what am I doing? I'm making the causes for peace. I have to keep laying the causes, and when the peace comes according to the amount of conditioning I have to work through. So the imagery there is always of planting it. Ajahn Chah would use planting a mango. If you want to grow a mango tree, you take the mango stone, you cut it, you get it rooted in water, you plant it in good soil, you take care of it, make sure the animals don't eat it, you make sure it's watered, it grows. But when the fruit falls. That's not my business. That's the business of karma. My business is simply to do the work, to chip away at the ice. So if one understands what are the causes for peace, it's quite clear about that. What are the causes? If I feel if I feel incredible greed for food, what are the causes and conditions for peace or non-greed in the future? Well, first of all, knowing, being aware, not hating myself, not making it a problem, not making it a self. I could, like, say, oh, I've got a food problem, you know? I've got a greed problem. That's not Buddhism. Buddhism is, there is suffering. This is a feeling of suffering. How do I liberate the mind from that? So I've got a greed problem. It's not a Buddhist practice. To then just stuff my face every day is also not a Buddhist practice. That's another tradition, I think. So that you kind of you get more and more with right understanding, again, Noble Eightfold Path, then right thought. So what's the right thought around say I learned so much about greed around food, because it really there was just the one meal a day, and it just was the same boring program, the same ice. It wasn't different ice. Same thing. I mean, I rarely went to those. It was mostly just around the food that was offered in the monastery. We didn't go to town that much. And just watching, the kind of hoping for sugar. That was a big one. It was really neat. Cane sugar, you know, and just kind of, is there any sugar today? and just little things like that began to, oh, that's expectation, that's hope, this is disappointment. And just kind of watching that, and just really learning about the mind around little things, just little things like that. What was valuable, of course, is repetition, and so that's what you got here, like it or not. You got repetition, you got a nice simple format, and the repetition of your mind, right? So the challenge is to kind of, okay, that's the way it is now. What are the causes and conditions for peace that I can lay now, right? Well, it has to be some sense of, first of all, acceptance, because I cannot understand or I cannot develop anything wholesome if I'm already trying to get rid of something that's already greed or hatred. So acceptance first of all, and that's building the paramita of equanimity, the very difficult one, actually, the difficult one to build. And I do think that that they are a package. So I always considered open-hearted equanimity. Now compassion or gladness without equanimity, quite like compassion without peaceful coexistence and acceptance of the way things are, that can lead to depression, sentimentality, burnout. Compassion needs the balance of peaceful acceptance of the way things are. So in Buddhism we say with birth there's death. Of course. With birth there's sickness. With birth there's old age, sickness, and death. This is the way it is. Life is this way now. Now, without an open-hearted attitude, that could become dismissive or cold or whatever. But life has suffering. There is disappointment. There is seeming injustice. This is the way it is. This is life. Life is this way now. So that the from the accepting open heart, We can certainly launch forward into social action and so on, but we're coming from a spiritual basis. So these two in the teachings around the what we call the paramitas, or the perfections of the heart, the metta and upekkha are much emphasized. You can see so if you see that as you practice, laying these foundations, I'm just going to be patient with this. I'm going to just try to stay open-hearted, something which kind of closes my heart. Like maybe some person at work or in the monastery or on the retreat kind of irritates you. You know, you get that, don't you? Some people just rub. And it's not, you know, it's socially kind of okay. You don't have to challenge them or whatever. And then you say, well, how can I be just open to this person? Not even like them. But how can I not close down to this person or hate myself for that? And then, those things, you keep training with those things. And they're all laying a foundation for peace. Even if the mind isn't peaceful now. That's all right. It's okay. That's just a kind of really sober approach to the spiritual life. It's a very long-term approach. You know, it's really kind of, well, okay, where do I want to be in 10 years' time with this? You know, okay, it is a kind of deeply ingrained habit. Like, I think all of us, when we start this, God, how am I ever going to sort this out? You know, when I started, I thought, whoa, this is a mess. Where am I ever? And then the kind of all the willfulness that, you know, after a year you're just too exhausted with willfulness, that's not going to work. I'm going to do this. And the teachers keep encouraging you, just keep making the causes. Keep making the causes. So right understanding is very important. And if you understand what the causes are, it's quite simply, karmically, what I do now, the intentions I do now, are my inheritance. So even though I might feel very angry right now, say, at myself or others, if I put in the cause for peace, of acceptance and compassion for my own suffering, then that will be my inheritance in the future, even though right now it's very agitated or whatever. So right understanding is very, very important, because that's going to direct my intention, how I'm going to operate. That will then lead to right thought. Then my thoughts will be thoughts like, hang in there, chip away, she'll be right, whatever language you like. But the language is coming from right understanding rather than a strong self view. Then from that you get, you know, again, you get right effort, right presence, right concentration. You understand how those operate, that lovely combination. And the path becomes more and more solid. And then the experiences don't matter. And then sometimes the experiences are very ethereal. Some people have kind of epiphanies of mind. Some don't. Many don't. Most don't. Set you up there. Most of the work is just ho-hum. Really, isn't it? But then you find, over a longer stretch of time, you find, like we were saying about Anne, when she got that accident, the practice clicked in for her. And she was in a car accident and broke her ribs, and the lung collapsed, and the shoulders broken in India. And she said that's what saved her, was the practice. That clicked in. Right? Or you just find you're not reacting to things the way you used to. Or you just find more and more confidence, and just slowly the mind being more stable and more confidence. And this is a very mature practice. It's not kind of some super effort that you make now, get very concentrated, and then it doesn't make any, it's not relevant to your life. It's a kind of very mature steady thing. So even if the conditions of mind seem profoundly difficult, still you just keep planting that mango seed. Just keep doing it, and it has to. That's just the nature of consciousness. That's the way it works. Can't be any other way. And that's where the faith has to lie. Has to lie in that understanding and the willingness just to kind of continue to do the work. And I've been emphasizing it, like one of the things is kind of, can you deepen your awareness with this experience? Can you sustain open-hearted attention with this experience? That's the challenge. This one. Rather than think, well, if I didn't have this experience, I could have some good meditation. You know, if the weather was different or whatever. It's this one. So tomorrow, Arsalan and I will be leaving at lunchtime, just after lunch. And Ajahn Kuslo will be giving the talk tomorrow night, so we'll be on this seat. I have a couple of interviews tomorrow morning. Anyone need anything from the stores? Up front? I think that's all. I'll leave that for your reflection.